And it's my own fault for not reading.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our guest is Jeff Grapevine. He's here to talk about the rise of Christo-fascism in the United States. And as we all know, it started with Reagan.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
Aisle there.
And Nick Glover.
Oh, no.
And we are joined today by Convergence attendee and longtime listener Jeff Grapevine.
Hello.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for coming on. When we were at Convergence this last year, we solicited topic ideas from people who wanted to be on the show, and then we drew a name at random. But since we had so many great ideas, we have been working our way through those people who were willing to give us their information after the fact to come on the show, and you are one of those people. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
So you wanted to talk about the rise of Christo-fascism in America, the elephant in the room.
Exactly. Well, actually, I want to talk about the acolyte, but
we beat you to that. And now there's not going to be a season two, so I guess we crushed your hopes and dreams. That's
no, not at all.
That you call it the elephant in the room, because I feel like.
Yes.
There's like a party affiliation that really...
Thank you for noticing my pun.
Well, curiously enough, that is... they're astounding. The Christo-fascism or white Christian nationalism, which is kind of the American cousin of Christo-fascism, is pretty much, I mean, as far as the percentages are concerned, has taken over the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. They're a huge... Institute and another company called the Public Religion Research Institute, which is a nonpartisan group that does surveys about this sort of thing, said that something like 50 or 60% of Republicans believe that America should be a Christian nation. So. Yeah, so when you say the elephant in the room, that's really, really true. That's really, it's a good pun, and it's really true.
And we see them, I mean, pushing these sorts of ideas across the nation. It's not just that they are, you know, hoping and praying and that'll happen. They are actively doing things to bring that about.
Yeah, they have a plan and an agenda.
Yeah.
They do. They are incredibly well organized. They've been doing this for about 40 some years. And they're incredibly well funded.
That's weird. Who was president like 40 years ago?
Huh.
Who was that? Who was that guy?
Let's see.
That's every fucking shitty thing. Every fucking shitty thing comes back to Reagan.
Yep.
It really does.
It really does. He is the source of all of our pain.
Historically, it really kind of is true.
Yeah.
You see a lot of these shifts start to begin with Reagan. And he certainly... he courted this fledgling, extremely right-wing Christian movement. I wish I could appreciate the irony that the Republicans kind of used this movement, and now it's taken them over. Mm-hmm. You know, they hope to kind of use it as a tool and advance some of their agenda, and now they're being controlled by it. If it wasn't so sad and frightening, it would be funny.
If it wasn't so powerful, perhaps. It wasn't so well.
Yes. Go ahead.
No, please.
For me, one of the frightening things is, and you know, I know this is really obvious, but when you're actually starting to look into the numbers, you know, how really a minority group white Christian nationalists are in the United States, but they're... influence, their position in government, their position in the public psyche is so much greater. But it comes back to that organization that, you know, the job that the leaders have done to kind of rile up the base. And we are living in particularly interesting times, the Chinese problem goes. So that, and that's another hallmark of when these sort of back to the these sort of Christian nationalist movements really pop up in American history, is when you have these periods where there's a lot of societal upset. I think for me, what makes this one particularly frightening is that white Christians are definitely in the minority, and they're going there.
Yeah.
And this is like more so than there was a movement in 1948 to have a constitution amendment that was declared the United States a Christian nation, and that didn't really go anywhere, as they had, you know, the Soviets to worry about, among mm-hmm. other things, but also because, you know, there was really no traction for it. You know, everybody was white back then, but now that we see these demographic shifts where whites and Christians are definitely becoming the minority,
yeah,
it's this really
desperate.
Violent, desperate.
Yeah,
yes, exactly.
Well, because desperate. once you start to lose your majority power, everyone knows that, you know, we've talked about this before on the show too, that when you're in the majority, anyone else gaining rights feels like you losing something to exactly. a lot of people, because it feels like they're losing a prestige. And so they feel yes. like they've always been in control. And as they see, you know, as younger people who are by and large less religious, less white, you know, overall are just starting to come out into politics in droves. They're actually, these people who've been in power, who are now in their 70s and 80s, have being forced to reckon with their worst nightmare, you know, and so they're desperately trying to legislate. And that's what fascism is trying to legislate exactly. what you want to see morally.
It makes me think of how wasps get angrier towards the end of the summer. Because like it's like winter is coming, and they're you know, they mm-hmm. get all riled up in their nests,
full of their venom,
and they can feel their own mortality.
Yeah. For real. And you know, it's absolutely the reason that it's not just the rise of Christianity or the problem with Christians in politics. This is the rise of Christo-fascism, because they are specifically enacting fascist laws using fascist tactics that have worked in many countries and in many places. Exactly. They're using those same tactics to gain the populace's trust and to allow these laws to just start to steamroll over our country.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. fascism is a lawful evil, if you want to go D&D about it.
Yeah.
It is using the law, government institutions to enact, you mm-hmm. know, evil acts.
To right? make people say things like, well, if you just obeyed the law, the police wouldn't have shot
right.
you.
Right. Yep. Exactly.
like that's, well, we don't have the death penalty.
You don't have
here,
anything to worry about if you're just a law abiding citizen.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
And that's, yeah.
And there's a strong thread or a strong number of white Christian nationalists who believe that, you know, any sort of, they favor the police, and that their mindset is, you know, well, if a black man gets shot, it was his fault. He got what he deserved.
Mm-hmm.
One of the frightening things. I'm going to stop saying one of the frightening things, because frankly, everything scares the shit out of me.
Yeah,
about this
yeah.
stuff. But that there is this real us and them binary going on within the white Christian nationalist movement. You know, if you are not one of the select, then you are a second-class citizen, and you don't even deserve basic human rights.
Even between Christians. Like, that's what's so shocking yeah. to me, is that they, yeah. even with, I mean, there are devout, people of devout Christian faith in this country who are not white, and they are even born again, they are Baptist, they are, you know, however you want to define evangelical Christianity, these people are part of it, and they don't get to be in this Christo-fascist club, because it's also about protecting the white race.
Exactly.
Apologies if you can hear a squeaky toy. The puppy is having a really good time, and I'm not taking it away from him, because then he'll bark. Anyway, well, but yeah, that's,
I mean,
that's
right on the head. Yeah. Yeah, one of the select or one criterion for being select is that you have to be white.
And a very pure kind of white too, right? Yes, like exactly. not just light skinned, not just your skin is what we would consider a shade that is white, but it's also your heritage, your bloodline and other gross things.
Yes, which is one thing I found fascinating was that there's this idea that the country was founded by white Christians, and so we are, which was a surprise to everyone who was already living here. And so if you follow the logic, which I know is dangerous and scary and not at all fun, of that, then really only the people who can claim to be true Americans are if you're related to a pilgrim, you know, that came over. But the fact of the matter is, you know, for most of us, black African slaves came over before our families did. So they're much more original Americans than we are. But there's this sort of buy-in that if your skin is a particular shade and if you can claim Protestant, for the most part, heritage, you can be white and you can be part of the club.
Well, you see it with Nikki Haley, you know, like, and other people who have, I mean, whitewashed themselves.
Well, and I think the hardest thing to understand here is that they've managed to wrap their rhetoric in such a way that they are attracting people who are not the people that they care about. And it is that you know, when they came for the political opponents, I didn't say anything because they weren't coming after me. And it's like, eventually they are going to come after you. Eventually you are the target. It's just, you're not the first target. And what they've done is create targets that you agree with. So you don't see, you know, while they're coming for the immigrants, for instance, the brown immigrants, then they're not coming for you. And that's fine, right? Because even if you see negative impact by the fact that your produce starts to get more expensive because there's nobody to pick it anymore, that doesn't matter. It still means you got rid of the brown people, and that's one of the people that you wanted to see go away. But eventually, if you're a Catholic who connects to the Christo-fascist movement, they're going to come for you because you're a Catholic. You're not a Protestant.
Right. There's always going to be useful people in the out groups who will be granted a sort of like guest, like a mascot,
like
or a sidekick status. Yeah. I mean, like Mark Robinson, the North Carolina nominee for governor, who called himself a black Nazi. Like, Molly and I have a friend who he and his sister are mixed race. And in her teenage years, she dated a fucking Nazi. And like,
neo-Nazi.
And it's like, some people will always find a way to, it's a very unique kind of tokenism where then these people can be paraded around when they get accused of, you know, when you accuse someone of being a anti-Semite or a racist, they can say, well, how can we be anti-Semitic when Ben Shapiro is Jewish? He's one of us. He supports this white nationalism cause, and he's, you know, we don't say things about him.
Well, Tim, you make a good point about how they use arguments that feel rational, or at least that you can almost find yourself agreeing with at first, about these other groups. Like, I can't tell you how many people I know who will say things like, of course, I'm pro-choice. I believe abortion is a human right. I just don't think people should be using it as birth control. And it's like, well, first of all, that's literally what it is. But like, second of all, that is such a, like, so who is doing that? Where are you hearing this? You've heard these stories of people who are just getting abortions constantly. But it sinks in those ways of like, you know, oh, I think that you shouldn't, you know, I think it's good to protest, but you shouldn't close down highways because an ambulance can't get through. These things that you hear and that's the little way that they chip in, and fascism, that's the little ways it takes things away.
Well, that's TERFs for anti-trans stuff. It's people who make arguments against trans people that you can say like, well, of course I don't have anything against trans folks. I just don't think that they should
X.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Fill in the blank. Yeah. Yep. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very careful piece of gatekeeping, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna say effectively that I'm for this thing, but I'm gonna gatekeep it in a way that you're not necessarily gonna be able to disagree.
Exactly.
With, which I find, especially like with abortion, if somebody's like, "Well, I'm for abortion in, I'm pro-choice, but I'm not pro-abortion." My answer is, I'm 100% pro-abortion, and I'm not going to apologize for it. I think abortion is not the lesser of two evils; it is actually a good. It is a good thing that needs to exist for our society to be a more positive place for people to live. And that is something that can be very difficult for people that are pro-life to listen to.
For sure.
Is, I'm going to explain to you why abortion is actually better than not.
Yeah, yeah.
And but when they do things like, well, we'll pass this law, but we'll make it so it's not in case of rape and incest.
Right.
Well, take off the rape and incest argument so later they can make it under all circumstances.
Jeff, are there any issues that you found, because abortion made me think of this, are there any issues that you found directly led to this Christo-fascism kind of taking root and starting to grow? Anything that seems like it was like the hot button issue? We know what started happening around 82, 84.
Yeah. What I was able to find was sort of like emotional, cultural, psychological fatigue, feeling of defeat coming out of the 70s, where we'd gone through we'd gone through the civil rights movement, we had assassinations, we lost in Vietnam, we had Watergate, and it was a simple answer. It was pitched as sort of a simple answer to your problems. You know, part of it is othering people. And it's like, it's not the fault of the people who move the steel mills to Japan or wherever. It's these immigrants that are coming over the border. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, that seems like that sort of, and I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the word. It's a simple word that I'll remember at 3 o'clock and wake up. but it's that sort of despair that was going on, that sort of...
Ennui,
thank you.
Yeah, just sort of the apathy that led to Generation X. I mean, to be honest, like that's absolutely where that comes from.
Yeah, and all of these rise from these times of discontent. That's where they get, you know, that's kind of their... that's kind of the power they get. That's the warm water, the political hurricane. It feeds that power. So, you know, you've got people who are discontented. They don't have answers. They don't feel like they've got power of any sort. What can they do? You know, and, you know, we as humans are kind of always looking for somebody to blame. It's not my fault. And it was really easy for the Republicans at the time, the moral majority at the time, to come in and say, we've got the answer for you, and here it is. It's, give yourself to God, give yourself to Jesus. Mm-hmm. Although Jesus, it's real. One of the curious things I found is that in the last 40 years, in the growth of white Christian nationalism, is that God has taken an ascendant place, but Jesus kind of gets shuffled. He's sort of lip service. I wish I could remember the video I was watching, but somebody, the commentator, compared Jesus to pudding cups. There was a guy who, in the 90s, there was, I think it was Yoplait or somebody,
yogurt?
I'm sorry.
No worries.
I am really this inarticulate. They had come out with a new flavor or a new brand of yogurt, and they had this contest, and all you had to do was buy yogurt and scan the barcodes, and you could get airline miles. Well, this guy figured out how to scam the system and ended up with like over a million airline miles. So the commentator on this video compared Jesus to yogurt. Jesus is sort of the excuse that gets them in.
Uh-huh. You know,
that's sort of the lure.
Yeah.
But after that, it's all about power. It's all about
sure.
persecution. And that's the other thing, too, that I know I'm getting kind of far afield, but one of the things that amazed me, and I don't know why it did, was that the persecution level amongst white Christian nationalists, is amazing. You know, at one point, statistically and demographically, there are a majority who think that more people than they believe in what they're about actually believe in it, so they think they're the majority, but then they're the most persecuted group in the country. Mm-hmm. So it's like all sorts of things that you just can't tear apart. So getting back to your question, I'm sorry.
No,
but that's kind of what I found, was this sort of this ennui and dissatisfaction in the 70s kind of was fertile ground for recruitment,
which makes sense with right now. I mean, we're absolutely experiencing a lot of those similar feelings of, you know, being left behind by your country and by society and everything changing around you in ways that you don't like.
Capitalism.
Absolutely.
I think your point about Jesus and God and the Christo-fascist movement seeming to be more about God than Jesus meshes pretty well with their message, because when you think about it, their message is not particularly Jesus-y. It's more Old Testament God.
Right.
And the book of Revelations.
Right. And the book of Revelations isn't about Jesus either, right?
So
because the parts of their religious philosophy align more with that Old Testament wrathful God than they do with the effectively forgiving and kind Jesus, they tend to give Jesus a lot more lip service and spend more time talking about God.
Right. And when they talk about Jesus, at least this is what I found, and I feel like I should qualify everything by said because I haven't read everything there.
Yeah, of course not, of course.
But generally what I found is when they talk about Jesus too, they don't talk about the Jesus of the Gospels. They talk about Jesus from Paul. You know, Jesus in the Gospels and probably the historical Jesus as well was about doing good works. You know, the Jesus of Paul was, you just have to acknowledge that he's your Lord and Savior and you're great. You're in the club. You know, you get your hand stamped and, and that's, I think, is interesting too, is that, Tim, you're spot on. You know, it's the Old Testament God. It's the God of Leviticus. It's the wrathful, angry, do as I say, God. It's not the love your neighbor.
No.
It's not the
socialist Jesus.
And Kurt Vonnegut has a great, I wish I could remember it all, but essentially he says, you know, whenever, did you ever notice that when people are advocating on bringing religion into a public place, it's always the Ten Commandments. It's never the Beatitudes.
Yes.
So I think that's really telling. For me, that's really telling right there. It's like, where are you really coming from?
Yeah.
I think, too, you know, it shouldn't be overlooked how many evangelical Christians out there truly do believe in Armageddon and in the end times, in the coming of the second coming of Christ and the deliverance and judgment and all of that happening, like, in real time on earth. And so there's a bunch of things that happen, and a lot of them are, I mean, as you can imagine, fucking wackadoos. And so they also have a lot of other, you know, and so when they see things like you already hear it when they're talking about the floods, people talking about plagues, we hear a lot about like, oh, haha, this pastor predicted today's a rapture. Haha, everybody. Mm-hmm. But like, There are a lot of people out there who believe what I mean, it's still a very silly version of this in my mind, but to them is a much more serious version of like, no, but if we can get nuclear war in the Middle East, that's one of the signs. And if we can get, you know, I know that when we watched that documentary about the family, the Christian group that is very, very powerful in the United States. And if you haven't seen that, that's incredible. I think it was on HBO Max. The family. Yep. And it walks through why they chose Trump as their candidate, because, you know, they felt like he fulfilled a lot of like little check boxes within those things about having somebody in power. Yeah. And they also felt like he'd be biddable because he's very clearly purchasable. So it's, to me, I think that that's something that even people I know who are, you know, reasonable people who, you know, whether or not they're religious is their business to be, you know, but they don't believe in any kind of, you know, Christian nation, and they don't want religion in our government, but they don't, I don't think they understand, they don't see the danger when you're like, but that person's an evangelical Christian, they shouldn't be in power. It's like, well, people's religion is religion, you know, that's not, and it's like, no, you don't understand. Those people like want to bring about the end of times. Like they are hoping for that. That's they've banked everything on that.
Yeah.
And I just don't think you can trust people who belong to a death cult to be in power over our future. People who are looking forward to dying because that's when the good stuff starts. That's not somebody you want taking care of our now.
Somebody who believes in the end times isn't going to do anything to help the now times.
I don't even think people who believe in heaven are really here the way that I want them here. People who think that there's going to be eternal life with a heavenly reward where all their pains are eased and life is easy. I don't think those people should be in power.
And you know, that's another factor that goes way back too. James Watt was, I think it was Reagan's first Secretary of the Interior. And he, in his confirmation hearings, said he believed that, you know, we didn't have to keep up parties. I mean, I'm paraphrasing very heavily.
Of course.
Because it was 40-some years ago. And I didn't bother to look it up, but I mean,
you're perfect for the show.
You know, the end times were coming. You know, so why let's drill or let's exploit? You know, these beautiful parks. He was also the one, the buffalo on the seal of the interior faced left, and when he came into the office, he changed it so it faced right. So talk about wackadoo.
Yeah, right. That's the
important.
It's important
to listen to. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's the weather machines. It's the space lasers. Yeah. It's the
Exactly. There's so much illogic and fantastic
leaps,
ideas. Yeah. Leaps. Yeah. It's like even now my mind is just freezing up.
Yeah.
And I don't
they're
know
so stupid. They're making it hard for you to think.
Well, you know, but yeah. And they're one of the things that I think that, well, two things I'm going to throw in about it. Doing research for this podcast enlighten me, for lack of a better term, on why Trump is so attractive to these people. And the other thing is that if you listen to the language they use, if you read what they're saying, they really do believe in things like demons and hell and Satan, and they believe, and one of the things that makes this so frightening and so dangerous is that if you believe that I'm Satan, if you believe that I'm doing work from the devil, why do you want have a dialogue with me? And if I am that, why should you extend any sort of rights to me? You're the enemy.
You think I'm evil.
Capital E. Right. Yeah. Right. There was a tweet that a guy named Wolf, William Wolf, who was a mid-level official in the Trump administration, sent out this year after Joe Biden's State of the Union address, where, you know, in it, I've got it, he said, and I think this encapsulates what's going on right now. He said, we need to see the deeper spiritual realities at play. This ain't just a political fight, it's a spiritual war. Heaven and hell are real, demons exist. And then he goes on for a lot of other really crazy stuff. But when I started to really kind of grasp that and know that it's not just theatrical speaking, it's not just something said for an effect, that it's really what they believe, that's when I really started to go, okay, this is something that I know for me, I am not going to be able to let go. This is going to be sticking with me. I've got to do whatever I can to tell others about this.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of an evangelical sort of.
Yeah, no shit.
Ironically.
Go door to door. Have you heard the terrible word? Have you heard the terrible word? Well, the bad news, sir. Are you aware of the bad news?
And another side to that, like, you know, our opponents are demons, or we're fighting literal demons here, is for the people that aren't in power, for the people that are, you know, it's very much a well, won't someone rid me of this troublesome priest type of a situation, where it's like, if you're calling your opponents demons and saying that these people are, you know, of Satan and are your spiritual enemy, then the takeaway from the people that are supporting you and voting for you and supporting you politically, that excuses any violence.
Oh.
That excuses any murder, and like those people that are making those kinds of threats are not going to mourn the loss of anyone that gets killed that way, and they'll view that sort of look at, you know, how when the Nazis came to power, instigating violence and then escalating violence once it's initiated was like their go-to, and then they could turn around and say, like, look at how these guys attacked us and we had to fight back, you know, back. Yeah. And like, that's how it was with Nazi punks, and that's it's useful violence.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that I think it's something like 4 in 10 of people who say there are adherence to white Christian nationalism also think it's okay to use violence to keep power and to further their purposes. They're very, very comfortable with authoritarianism. And to your point, if I'm less than human, the consequences of killing me are far less.
Yeah, the othering makes it, I mean, and it does go both ways, because I know people who think that same way about quote unquote Trump voters, and genuinely are like, if they could all just die, everything would be better. And it's like, right. I mean, I don't think you've thought through the consequences of that, because a lot of them did, and shit got worse. It was called the pandemic. And so it's not that easy, you know,
And maybe your fantasy shouldn't be that they all died. Maybe the little fantasy that you slip into should be that they all wake up and realize they're being duped by someone, and that these people don't have their best interests at heart. Someone the other day was like complaining about the Democratic Party, actually, and they're like, I hate that I can't even complain about a party that I generally support, because other people in that party will immediately have a fantasy about me experiencing violence at the hands of someone that's a Trump supporter, where they're like, well, you have to vote for them, otherwise, you know, these types of things are going to happen and you're going to get killed. And it's like, man, like, that should be a moment where you self-reflect when your immediate response is you fantasize about someone else experiencing violence.
Yeah.
And I think that applies to this as well. Like,
I agree.
Yeah. Let's wish that they all, you know, fucking wake up and educate themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the thing that we have to acknowledge is there's a propaganda machine at work that has been building itself over years, and that we were warned against and didn't really the progressive side of the aisle never figured out what to do about it. Because for lack of a better term, the progressive side of the aisle is less inclined to lie in order to get people on their side. And that doesn't mean they don't lie. It means they are less inclined to lie, or that their lies are less egregious and less easy to believe.
They're not radical lies. Boring lies.
You know,
conservative saying, lies from the radical left.
Right, ironically, yes.
And so, you know, they've created this propaganda machine that pushes out on multiple platforms the same lies over and over and over again. And so the other side is just constantly having to fight those lies just to get their message through.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's part of Christo-fascism as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's I think I had an ex-roommate that said, like, the only three things fascism ever gets right is snappy uniforms, public transportation, and I can't remember the third one, but it was relevant to what you were just saying, Tim. Fuck. It's like public transit, snappy uniforms, and just messaging. Like, yeah, messaging.
Messaging,
that's, yeah,
sure,
that's what it
yeah,
is. Like,
yeah.
like uniform messaging too. Yeah. Not
snappy uniform dress managing.
Not just like they have good propaganda, but yeah. they all are in lockstep, with one another.
Yeah.
Like that's, you know, fascism terrible, but they do those three things really well.
Well, I mean, and they're gonna, you know, it's the Fahrenheit 451, the party told you to cover your eyes and ears, or
oh, right.
that everyone always quotes about the Democrat in government, and it's like, okay, like everyone calm down.
Sure, buddy.
Well, I should go around to all my younger friends and just apologize for using up all the irony in the 90s.
Right.
I'm really sorry. We thought it was inexhaustible. We didn't think people wouldn't, you know, have a sense of it.
Sorry. We apologies for the ennui and the attitude that we perpetuated. At the time, it just felt like trying something on.
Yes.
Didn't know it was going to be so pervasive. Yeah. It's I think that this has been a really great conversation, genuinely. And we do want to move on to five questions here from you. But I think that it's one of the things to really end on is to look for these sorts of things in your local politics, regardless of what country you live in, because it is not just America. It is on the rise across the globe. White nationalism, Christo-fascism, and in countries where there aren't a lot of white people, plain old good times fascism. The Christo fascism seems to be pretty white in nature.
Still people trying to establish an ethno state, just a different ethno.
A different ethno, yeah, right. Absolutely.
Right. But no, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that is very, very, very important, is to look for it and to be aware of it.
And it starts
and
low.
Not treat it like it's still a bunch of minority crazies.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not going to get less common or calm down as climate stuff starts to kick up. When there are more climate refugees, mm-hmm. people seeking assistance and places to move because where they live now isn't habitable, mm-hmm. or the various resources we might exhaust or might suddenly not be accessible because mm-hmm. of climate change. Like, there's so much fascism is fed by the other joining your community or becoming a part
taking
of your state,
your
and like refugees, international refugees is such a thing that is like that kicks up fascism mm-hmm. everywhere. So,
right. And if I could add just one more thing,
please.
The only other thing I think, don't give me that license or we'll be here all night. But the other thing I would say is vote.
Yeah,
sure.
Because vote, because these folks will vote, and
oh,
they
yeah?
vote in incredible numbers. There was one study I read that said the 10% of people who in the United States who identify as white Christian or Christian nationalists, like 93% of them voted in 2016, or 97% voted and 93% voted for Trump. So, so vote, get out and vote.
Yeah.
It is important.
It is, and you know, those local level races, there are,
yes.
fascism isn't just contained to, you know, senators and presidents. There are right. school board elections. There are, you yeah. know, people running for judge positions. There are, you know, district attorneys. There are all kinds of people looking to bring about a Christian nation, with or without your consent. So try to make it without if you can.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. So it is time for us to move on to five questions.
Okay.
And our first five question. Good Lord. Question one coming at you from Tim. Yes.
Coming at you from me. Question number one. What is a game you played recently that you really enjoyed?
I played Cosmoctopus recently.
Oh, yeah. That looked so fun.
Oh, it was so much fun. I really enjoyed it.
It looked,
I love video games, but I really suck at them. So
yeah.
I tend to stick to word games. It was fun. I like it a lot.
It had like really, it has like really well made like pieces and stuff, right? Isn't that the one? It's like crazy octopus. Like,
yeah.
I'm a game producer, and that's one of the things that I really like obsess about seeing is like the pieces and the stuff that come along with a game.
I think that was so much fun. That was so cute. The pieces were great.
The pieces look great.
The engines were on.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Got that Kickstarter money, baby. You got it. That's how you know you get the good stuff. All right. Nick, question two.
What science fact or discovery do you think is really fucking cool?
I'm really, really excited for the Jupiter Icy Moons Explorer and the Europa Clipper missions. I've been a space nerd all my life. And I know it's going to be years before they even get to the planet, to get to Jupiter, but I'm really stoked about that. I'm really excited about what will come back, whatever comes back.
I have to not think about that stuff, because otherwise it's like the longest catalog ordering ever from when you were a kid. Getting that stuff back from Jupiter is what it felt like to order something with 4 to 6 weeks delivery time when you were a kid. And it was like your whole life.
Right.
All right. So question three is, where do you get your sense of right and wrong from, since we are assuming it isn't religion, but maybe it was?
Johnny Cash.
Ooh, I like this.
And the story behind that is that when I was probably 8, 9 years old, for whatever reason, I was listening to Folsom Prison Blues. And I mean, to this day, I remember where I was and the effect on me when I heard the line, I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. Now the train keeps rolling, I hang my head and cry. And I knew from that moment, I can't tell you how, I can't tell you why, but I just knew that I had a sense of right and wrong, and I wasn't going to be on that side.
It's kind of a religious experience to some degree, right? Like when something calls to you that way. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and when I can remember so vividly where I was.
Mm-hmm.
But outside, you know, I was looking out the window and I heard it. So,
like, That'll never be me. I'm going to be one of the people drinking coffee and smoking big, thick cigars in the cars of the train. Exactly. That's me. I'm the good guy. Yeah, I love it.
Funny and somewhat embarrassing story. When I was a kid, like I want to say like 11 or 12, hanging out with my friend at his house, and his mom said something about, like, a family friend coming by, someone coming by, asking if I want to meet their friend, you know, Johnny, talking about how you know, Johnny Cash, you know, don't you know Johnny Cash? I'm like, I don't know who that is. And they're like, oh. And I think they must have explained it in a way where they were like, yeah, you're like, you know, country music. And I was like, country music? Blah. Yeah. No thanks. I'm going home. See you guys later. And I missed out on a like personal, private, social introduction to the Man in Black. Definitely not something I think about like once or twice a month and go, you fucking idiot.
Tim, question four.
Yeah, if you could build a robot to perfectly perform one task or chore for the rest of your life, what would that robot be doing?
This was a hard one, because normally I would say a dishwashing robot, because I love to cook, and the thing that I don't like about cooking is the wrath of
even loading the dishwasher is a pain in the ass. Like it's a fine robot. It's not great.
Yeah, so I came up with like a robot driving car, or a robot that could drive a car, because I really don't like driving, particularly in the city, but I like going places. So
With the direct quickness of a car, as opposed to like public transit, is it takes so long.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I love it.
Sense. Yeah.
So you know, you seem like not an asshole. So I think you should invent a robot driving car, and then you would make a lot of money, because there's a lot of people like me who want one, but I can't get one because I'm not buying one.
Well, there's a reason why I have a liberal arts degree.
I feel that in my bones, my brother. I feel that in my bones.
Yeah. All right. A degree for reading? Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Nick, question five.
All right. Question five. Last one. What's a movie or a TV show you think everyone should watch?
this was the hardest question to answer.
Yeah.
And I spent a good chunk of my afternoon instead of preparing for this, trying to think of the answer. So because I just can't give one answer, the two films I would recommend are both from Akira Kurosawa, the great Japanese director. The first one would be a film called Ikuru, which is To Live. It's a great, really heartwarming.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, yeah. That would be the one.
Okay.
And then the other one would be The Grandparents of Star Wars, The Hidden Fortress.
Oh. Ooh, Ikuru looks good.
Those are the two that
good.
I would recommend. I think that just, you know.
Ooh. Ikuru was partly inspired by Tolstoy's The Death of Ivan Ilyich.
Yeah.
Exciting. Oh, man, that's great.
Good stuff.
And it was
those are great
remade
answers.
A couple years ago with Bill Nighy.
What?
And I think it was called, I don't remember the title. I think it was actually called Living, but every time I say that, I think, well, it can't be that easy.
Fantastic.
Neat. I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. This has been a wonderful conversation. So glad we had you on. This was as nice a time as anyone can have talking about Christofascism. I think we had it tonight.
So. Great. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I had a great time. Had a blast. I love what you guys do.
Thank you. Well, if you think of something else you want to talk about, hit us up, man, because we are always awesome. Happy to have guests, especially when they're personable and well-knowledged.
Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Well, thank you so much for listening. If you've been listening to us, we really appreciate it. You can leave us comments. Tell us what you think about Christofascism. Spoiler alert, if it's not bad, we're going to block you. If you think, actually, it has some good points, you're going to get blocked. All right. But thank you so much. We want to appreciate it.
The trains do run on time. And that's a good thing.
We appreciate all of our patrons. We appreciate all of our listeners, especially those of you who are new to our show. If you've just started joining us lately, welcome especially, and thanks for being here. And if you haven't heard the news already, well, we will see you next Tuesday. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, we all know it didn't start with Reagan, but he made it worse, as with most things.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God. Social media!
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
We'd have a little while to get it done, but